vision following him home on the streetcar, stalking his friends.
Oh, God, honey,
she said, and hating myself every fucking second.
I wish you told me. Why didn't you?
Oh, never mind. I know better than to ask. I was the queen of not telling. I almost told you. I called you and I got Opie, and he told me you were in the hospital. She closed her eyes. Shit. I couldn't tell you. Not then. You were fighting your own war, and I couldn't unload more on you. The only other person who would understand was Lucky, and I'd shit all over that relationship. But I sucked it up hard, and called her mother, who took great pleasure in telling me Lucky was on vacation with her rich boyfriend in the Bahamas.
Jesus, what did you do?
Will smiled. Kept sucking it up. Seb left Frankfurt and went to the Dutch National Ballet, which put an end to the daily torture of seeing him. But I knew something else was wrong. Something deeper, and Seb was the catalyst. A can of snakes was open and I couldn't close it. In a way, I didn't want to close it, like I deserved what happened, you know?
You were James, out in the yard, she said, staring up at Seb's window, wanting him to come down.
He nodded. Everything kept getting darker, colder, and more depressing. And when I reached the point where I didn't even want to get up and go to class anymore, I guess I knew then it was time to do something or die.
You were so far from home. Were you terrified? He started to shake his head, then closed his eyes with a faint smile.
Yeah, it was bad.
How did you find help in Germany?
I knew this girl in the Corps, Beatrice. She was American, and I knew she'd had trouble with anorexia when she first joined the company, but had gotten a handle on it. I figured she might know where to get some help. And she was awesome. She helped me find a shrink, and, well, you know what it's like. It gets a whole lot fucking worse before it gets better.
They drank their coffee in silence for a moment. I wonder, Daisy said. We all have our horror story now. Me, you, John and David, and Neil, look how messed up he still is. He pressed a finger into the muffin crumbs on her plate and ate them.
What of it?
Do you think Eric ever... I just wonder if he tanked at some point, too.
Maybe that's what I was looking for in here.
Will flicked Eric's note.
Or maybe you put it better. I wanted... Hey, great to hear from you. I miss you, asshole. Call me. Let's cut the bullshit. We're too fucking old for it now.
But what would it be like seeing him? Honestly. Will swallowed, slowly shaking his head.
I miss my friend, he said. I love Lucky. I don't have to tell you. She makes my life so sweet. I love being married to her, and I can't wait for this kid to be born. I'm in a place now that's so precious, Daisy. I wouldn't fuck around with it if you paid me. But I miss my friend. Every time I look up at the catwalk over the stage, I'm looking for him. I got a problem. I talk to him in my head, working it out. 8 times a day, I want to tell him something funny and crack my ribs open laughing. It's crazy he wasn't at my wedding. It's bullshit I can't call him when Lucky has the baby. I miss the four of us. I want it back. I'm sorry. It must kill you to hear it, and I'm a shit for even saying...
I want it back too, she said. I'd settle for a close facsimile.
Will sighed.
He reached for Daisy's hand and held it to his lips a moment.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for telling me. Over her knuckles, his eyes crinkled at her. Then he let go her hand and checked his watch.
We should get back.
They reached for jackets and bags, threw some bills on the table. Will picked up the picture of Seb and regarded it a minute, then crumpled it in a fist and tossed it into his coffee cup. He seemed about to do the same with Eric's note, but Daisy stilled his hand. Keep it, she said.
Why?
Because he returned his treasure, and he was grateful. Even if he didn't make any other overtures, you can tell he was thankful. And he made jokes. It's a start. Keep it for hope, Will. You did nothing wrong. You did nothing but love him. Will set his hand on her crown, leaned and kissed her forehead.
Sometimes I forget who my true best friend is, he said.
Shrine. She dreamed about Eric that night. She couldn't see him, but knew he was there, below her, his arms locked around the back of her neck, giving her his dead weight, hanging on to her. She woke up with a stiff neck and the truth. It wasn't a good idea to have Eric literally hanging around. She came to the theater a little early the next evening, sat at her dressing table, and turned on the mirror lights, revealing her shrine. All around the frame, newspaper clippings and memorabilia were tucked, from the Met Opera, from Phantom and Orgarelle, pictures of her friends and colleagues, her parents and her cat, Sovereign. Small bouquets of dried roses hung from the top of the mirror, along with the first pair of point shoes she wore when she was 12. From a white ribbon hung Taylor Revelle's knitting needle. Knit one, purl two, don't forget I love you. On the tabletop were her Matryoshka dolls, unnested and lined up in size order. She'd collected them since she was a child and had several sets at her apartment. This set stayed at the theater. Eric gave them to her for her 18th birthday. Every dressing room from Philly to New York to California, she had unpacked and arranged them, and they watched her dress and makeup. Why had it taken her so long to realize all of her mementos of Eric belonged here? She slid the jump ring of the scissors off the gold chain and put them into the littlest doll. The lock of his hair went into the next doll. All the pocket finds, spare change, guitar picks, screws and washers, and the ridiculous clump of lint were carefully put away. Almost immediately, she felt better. He was off of her neck and out of her closet, away from her living space, and behind the scenes, backstage in the middle of creative production, exactly where he should be, because it was the place he loved best. Ray Flowers. Edwina Mager, the company's senior rehearsal accompanist, was turning 60 and throwing a bash. Daisy looked forward to the party all week, but after Saturday's matinee, she was tired to her bones and had a splitting headache. Two aspirin and a quick catnap didn't help much. For Edwina's sake, she gritted her teeth and got into the shower. She'd go and show her face, have a drink, and hit the road. She could be back in bed with a book in a couple of hours. As enticement, she straightened the covers and plumped the pillows high, laid out her pajamas all ready to fall into. Sovereign jumped up and curled herself into a purring ball against the bolster. "Be home soon, lover," Daisy said, putting in her earrings. "Don't start without me." At least it was warm out. After weeks of sulking, spring had finally decided to make an appearance, and the soft June evening felt good on Daisy's shoulders. She rolled down the windows and sang as she drove along Chelsea Drive toward Indiantown, north of the city. 15 people were the minimum required to secure the double-long picnic table on the porch of Michael's Crab House. When Daisy arrived, Edwina's guests had taken raucous possession of the veranda. Daisy loped up the scuffed steps in the wake of a sturdy waitress confidently bearing two pitchers of beer in each fist. Drink in hand and engaged in conversation, Daisy felt herself perk up. Without realizing it, she was soon caught in the shuffle of everyone taking seats, maneuvering their legs under the picnic table and arranging their phones and beers on top. Daisy squeezed in, got one leg under the table. To pull the other one in, she practically had to lean back into the lap of the man sitting next to her. "Hello," she said. "Sorry." "No problem," he said, moving over a little. She smelled him before she got a good look at him, a tiny top note of cologne or aftershave, barely there. Underneath it was a deeper note, something much more elemental and male. Skin, a waft of confidence, maturity, and subtle sexuality. All of it cozied up into Daisy's nose and smoothed away the last bit of ache between her brows. She was seated properly now, stowing her bag under her feet and feeling the man's eyes on her as she shrugged out of her blazer. Underneath, she wore a black sleeveless top. Her many silver bangles jingled from wrist to forearm as she brushed her hair back. The man's face was set straight ahead, but his swiveled gaze was still on her, sideways and a little shy. She offered him her hand.
Daisy, hi.
His shake was warm and strong. Ray, nice to meet you. His short, thick hair was salt and pepper, definitely easing into silver. Underneath dark brows, his eyes were denim blue. He smiled at her. His expression seemed to slide an invisible arm around her shoulders.
Are you a friend of Edwina's?
He asked. She nodded. I'm in the company. And you?
Ray set down his empty beer bottle. You know Daria, Edwina's daughter? She works for me.
She just started a job at an art gallery, that's right. Are you the owner?
I am.
That was all the small talk allowed before the food arrived. Service was immediate at the menuless Michaels.
Crabs and beer. Period.
Three waiters burst out of the main restaurant with bus tubs held high over their heads, trailing steam and the strong, briny smell of the ocean behind them.
Oh boy,
Ray said to no one, looking like a child looks at a birthday cake. People moved glasses and bottles aside in anticipation. The long table was covered with layers of newspaper and brown butcher paper, and down its center marched old mason jars with crackers, mallets and picks, and rolls of paper towels on wooden spindles. Women were taking the plastic bibs kept in a basket on the table, unfolding and spreading them carefully across their nice blouses or white jeans. Daisy's only precaution was to slide an elastic off her wrist and pull her hair back in a ponytail. Ray smiled at her.
I see you equate eating well with a good sporting event.
Daisy grinned back at him, toes curling in her shoes as the evening took on a whole new flavor. Then, without ceremony, the waiters dumped their cargo on the table in a magnificent sprawl. Hands lunged in all directions, tearing off legs and ripping off claws, hammering, cracking, picking, dunking bits in butter and eating with their fingers. The crosstalk and laughter got louder, the beer was flowing, and everyone was being a glorious slob. Daisy felt her petals unfold in the sunshine of Ray's attention. He wasn't leering at her, but she could feel his frequent glances as she licked butter and Old Bay spice off her fingers, or used one clean knuckle to tuck a wayward strand of hair behind her ear. She talked equally to him and the people sitting across from her. Ray made friendly conversation around as well. But at some point, the balance tipped and their bodies began to angle further and further in toward each other. Beneath the table, their calves bumped again, then agreed to stay still and get acquainted. And then it was just the two of them, chattering away in a bubble, sharing one mallet and one pick and one clump of paper towels. One of their many exchanged glances snagged and caught and held.
I'm sure you hear this all the time, Ray said. But
she blinked, waited for him to say something about her eyes.
You have beautiful posture.
She drew her neck up, holding his gaze, trying to keep the smile from exploding through her mouth and failing.
Your shoulders are lovely, he said.
Her hands were fully engaged in dismantling the body of a crab, all 10 fingers in. As she looked down, laughing, that strand of hair came untucked and went sliding across her temple. Ray reached a finger and stopped it, moved it back behind her ear.
I'd like to see you again, he said, his voice a low confidence.
She finished chewing, swallowed, and said in the same low tone,
You will.
They were the last ones sitting at the table. The busboys cleaned around them as they exchanged cards over coffee and chocolate cake, the restaurant's single dessert offering.
Daisy, Ray said, short for Marguerite.
She looked down at his card. Gallery 247, LTD. Jean-Raymond Bonlu, owner. Quebec City, Montreal, St. John. Bonlu, she said, touching the word. Good wolf. He tilted his head, corners of his eyes crinkling over the rim of his coffee cup. Usually the wolves come for me at 4 in the morning, she said in French. He put his cup down.
Did you know, he said, also in French, that the head of a daisy is made up of several smaller flowers called ray flowers?
He reached a hand and helped her on with her jacket. They extricated themselves from the bench seats, and Ray walked her out to the porch.
They shook hands and pressed cheeks 3 times.
I almost didn't come tonight, Daisy said.
He tucked her hair behind her ear.
That would have been a tragedy.
Will you call me?
Will you answer?
She laughed, and her hand, of its own accord, brushed his cheek, ran out along his shoulder, down his arm, and squeezed his fingers. Good night. She had only turned onto the main road when her cell phone rang.
I don't know if you remember me, but we met tonight.
Her face stretched with pleasure. Where are you?
Still standing on the porch, watching you drive away.
Her eyes flicked to the rearview mirror, but she rounded a bend, and the cove was out of sight. Aren't you supposed to wait something like 3 days before you call a girl?
3 days to call a girl. If it's a woman, like you, call immediately.
I see.
I was thinking of going to the Hopper exhibit at the Art Center tomorrow,
he said. Alone?
That was my plan. Would you like to go with me?
I'd love to.
Will you have breakfast with me first?
I'd love that too.
What else do you love?
She laughed. I don't love talking on the phone while I'm driving, so I'm going to hang up now.
Will you call me when you get home, or do you have to wait 3 days?
I can call when I get home, if you want.
I want. Your French is beautiful. You were either raised in the Rhône Alpes or by someone who was.
My mother is from Lyon.
You have a good ear.
You have beautiful eyes.
I'll call you in a few minutes.
All right, Daisy. Drive safely.
A bientôt. Bon lu.
Your kind of fight. She suggested Kate's Bakery for breakfast and declined to be picked up. I'll meet you there. Through the glass front doors, she saw him sitting on the wooden bench in the vestibule, elbows on knees, feet tapping a tattoo on the terracotta floor. His face lit up when she walked in. He stood, his tall frame unfolding until it seemed to fill the small space with joy.
Good morning,
he said. Something in his voice and eyes reminded Daisy of Case Giusti, how Case could call your name and say hello as if only you existed for him.
Sleep well?
He asked after they were seated. He shrugged his leather jacket off and onto the chair back. Under it, he wore a handsome button-down shirt, navy blue with a raised textured pattern. His hair looked damp and his face gleamed freshly shaved.
I did,
she said, sliding her own jacket off.
I feel bad I kept you up so late talking.
I don't feel bad at all, she said, smiling. The waitress appeared and poured water into their glasses.
Can I bring anyone coffee?
Yes, Ray said, and glanced at Daisy. For you?
She nodded, digging in her purse for a hair elastic.
No, actually, make it tea, she said.
Because I'm sorry. And I'll always be sorry, and I think I can have a cup of goddamn tea now.
I love it when you do that,
Ray said.
What?
Talk to myself? He laughed.
I mean, pull your hair back when you sit down to eat. But the mumbling thing is adorable, too.
Get used to it, she said, opening the menu. She ordered the eggs Florentine, and he got the French toast. By unspoken arrangement, halfway through their meals, they switched plates. Conversation flowed like syrup, puddling comfortably around their ankles.
What did your wife do?
Daisy asked. From last night's conversation, she knew Ray was widowed 10 years before, leaving him with a 16-year-old daughter, Ariel. Bray smiled as he ran a bit of toast around the last of the egg yolk on the plate.
She came from a long line of bookbinders, he said. She lived for books. Loved nothing more than an afternoon in a library or a dusty secondhand bookstore looking for treasure. If she wasn't reading, she was writing.
Did she publish anything?
No. After the baby was born, well, you know how it is. Dreams get put on hold during those years. Too little time, too little energy. She thought about going back to school, but never put a plan together. She worked with her father, but as it suited her.
Ray's soft laugh was affectionate as he looked out the window.
Huh. Noelle had no end of dreams and ideas, but so little drive to make them come alive.
She liked to be there, not get there, Daisy said. Ray's head tilted.
Yes, exactly.
I have a friend who's the opposite. Go on, though.
I would draw these funny pictures for Ariel, little people.
Ray wiped his mouth and his long fingers began folding his napkin.
We'd make up names for them, group them into families, and create life stories. Noelle had an idea to write a series of children's books based on them. I thought it was a spectacular idea, a husband and wife collaboration. I turned out 100 drawings, but she was still working on the story when she died. Ah, thank you,
he said to the waitress, who brought the check.
Do you want to drive over to the art center?
No, it's beautiful out, Daisy said. Let's walk. After 3 hours at the Hopper exhibit, they went to lunch, a long one in a sunny window at the Wharf Tavern.
You look sleepy,
Ray said, chin resting on the heels of his hands. A little, she said. After lunch is usually when I nap.
I love to nap, he said, sighing, and I'm so good at it.
She laughed and was genuinely disappointed when he checked his watch and sighed again. He was due back in Quebec City for an opening and needed to get to the airport. While the conversation was nonstop, they hadn't been particularly touchy-feely during the day. Only now, on the walk downtown, did Ray take her hand.
I'll call you when I land.
Yes, let me know you got there safe. A strange sadness came over her as they neared the building where he was renting a studio apartment. She was filled with a thick longing.
I feel so emotional, Ray said. I'm not sure why.
I do too. Her hand hesitated, then reached up. She glided her thumb across one of his eyebrows. He leaned and kissed her mouth. Soft, like a promise. His scent filled her head. Come back soon, good wolf, she whispered.
I will.
He kissed her again. A corner of his bottom lip curled under his teeth. He tried to smile through it, but ended up shaking his head and touching her cheek with the backs of his fingers.
Go, he said, or I won't.
With an effort, she walked away, turning back twice to wave. Once at home, she called Lucky. I met someone.
Who? Lucky said. Another zygote?
Oh my God, are you ever going to let that go? Seriously, it was 6 months ago.
Let go of you having a fling with the 19-year-old behind the deli counter? Not anytime soon.
He was 20, and he served a certain purpose.
Served it all night, I bet.
Daisy laughed. He didn't know what he was doing, but he could do it all night. Anyway, this guy isn't a zygote. He's 46. Hold on, I need both ears for this. Will. William. Man the fort, I have to talk to Daisy. She met someone. Through the receiver, Daisy could hear Will give a bark of laughter.
Another zygote.
The sound of a closing door and the domestic cacophony was silenced. All right, my dear, say again, he's how old?
46. Holy shit, Lucky said. You met a man! She sang the word with relish. A man, Daisy said, echoing the high note. They sang it together. A man! She met a man!
Not a boy, but a man, Lucky said. And what line of work is this man in? He owns an art gallery and
he's gay.
God damn it, don't say, now you ruined it.
And we were doing so well.
Fuck, Daisy said. Well, we won't jump to conclusions. Let Will meet him. Out of all of us, he's got the superior gaydar. I do want you to meet him. He's coming back next weekend. We have tickets for the Symphony New Brunswick.
I insist on meeting him. Let's go for drinks. Or brunch.
Hey, not for nothing, Daisy, but it's been a while since you had that goofy tone in your voice. It's so nice to meet you, Lucky said, shaking Ray's hand. As he turned to greet Will, she widened her eyes at Daisy.
Silver fox, she mouthed.
Daisy's return smile was smug. They chatted through a first round of drinks. Daisy excused herself to the ladies' room and, coming back, met up with Will buying a second round at the bar.
On regale pour lui, he said.
He is easy on the eyes, yes, and he also speaks French, so behave. Will smiled and put his arm around her.
I meant you look beautiful, dumbass.
Daisy felt beautiful. Her dress was new, pearly gray brocade with a halter top and a swingy skirt.
I'm not getting a gay vibe, Will said.
From me?
He lightly swatted the back of her head.
He's a good guy.
I like him, Daisy said. We've talked every night this week until the wee hours. My phone bill is going to be a scream.
He's how old?
46. She drew in her breath. He's going to be a grandfather soon.
Will's eyebrows flew up.
What, did he get married when he was 12?
Almost. Got his girlfriend pregnant when he was 18.
Well, I guess no wondering if he's a decent guy. Did they end up divorcing?
She passed away 10 years ago. Their daughter is having a baby any week now.
Making Ray the hottest grandpa in town.
Daisy smiled.
Age doesn't mean anything. Let it unfold.
Will laid his hand on her cheek.
I like seeing you happy.
She hesitated. He comes from money.
What kind of money?
Montreal banking money.
Patron of the arts money?
She nodded.
Will gave her a little push toward the table.
Go fuck him before I do.
Dinner was both easy and relaxed, smoldering and chemical. At the symphony concert, Daisy sat with her arm looped through Ray's, her hand in his, buzzed with both wine and attention, luxuriantly content in her skin, slightly bored. Ray brought her hand up to his mouth a moment, then tilted his head toward her.
I'm bored out of my mind,
he whispered.
Let's get out of here.
She suppressed a giggle. And go where?
Dancing.
As if I didn't like you enough. Then the coughing paused between pieces. They took flight, skulking down the aisle and not making eye contact with the ushers. They dashed like bank robbers down the wide front steps. As he peeled out of the parking lot, Ray's laughter filled the car.
Stupid, he said, shifting gears. But I always wanted to abscond with a beautiful female and lay rubber as I drove away.
Am I your first abscondment?
You are. Did you make that word up?
I did. Ray shifted gears again, a delicious smile around his face.
Make up another.
Absconce.
Sounds like a lighting fixture.
A stolen lighting fixture.
Oh, fuck this,
he said. He downshifted and brought the car to a stop on the shoulder. Did you see a cop? Daisy said, turning in her seat to look out the back. Then Ray's hands were on her face, and he was drawing her to him over the console, the warm smell of him, his inhale catching her exhale.
Come here,
he said, just before his mouth took hers. She melted into his kiss, running a hand up the back of his head, a rush of air in her ears, layered with the click of the hazard lights, the jingle of Ray's keys as his knee set them swinging from the ignition, a sigh first in her chest, then in his.
Where?
He said, his forehead against hers.
Where have you been?
Right here, she said, and kissed him again. I'm so happy, she thought later. Caught up in Ray's arms as the band played, Can't Help Falling in Love. I'm so glad you dance, she said.
Not all that well, I'm afraid,
he said, which was untrue, but typical of Ray's self-effacing manner. I don't care that a man can't dance, she said. I care that he won't dance. She laid her head on his shoulder. He was warm and solid beneath her. She felt both powerful and protected in his embrace. During all the late-night phone conversations of the past week, her stories had easily flowed from her heart to his ears. Eric, the shooting, the cutting, therapy, life on the road and her career. Ray listened, gathering her tales in his hands, examining them and asking thoughtful questions, peeling her open.
I want to hear more,
he always said before they hung up.
I can't wait to talk again.
She couldn't wait either. She woke up thinking about him, fell asleep with his voice lingering in her ear. His inviting manner made her want to share herself. Folded in his strong arms, swaying to the music, she was enveloped in a multi-layered attraction she hadn't felt in years. Are you the one? She wondered, tilting her head to smile up at him.
You're so beautiful, I want to die,
Ray said. He took her hand and put it up behind his neck, then slid both his palms against the small of her back.
The band modulated and segued into another song.
The female vocalist stepped up to the mic and began singing The Man I Love in a throaty alto.
Daisy sighed. Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong.
This was your song,
Ray said. Yes.
Does it bother you to hear it?
No, she said against his neck. But I'm bored out of my mind. Let's get out of here. Her bedroom gold with candlelight.
A dozen votives melted into clear liquid around sputtering flames. Her dress was in a silvery heap on the floor, the sleeve of Ray's flung shirt across it protectively. One of his shoes was spooning one of her slingbacks. A constellation of loose change twinkled on the rug. On the bed, Ray sprawled on his stomach, his expression intent as he stroked her left leg, fingertips touching her scars.
You were only 20,
he said. Just.
Turn over.
She rolled away and showed him her back. His fingers were curious, but gentle. They touched the one deep scar by the base of her spine, its companion beneath her shoulder blade. Can you see any others? She asked. His breath floated warm over her back as he peered.
Yes, he said, touching the curve of her waist. They're there if you look close and know what you're looking for.
I wondered.
You cut where you couldn't see,
he said. It was a dark time. He kissed the back of her neck. I'm thinking I might tattoo over them, she said, nestling a cheek into the pillow.
Don't.
His hands were turning her again.
Leave your skin alone.
She toppled onto her back, and her hand went to his head, playing with his hair. Both his hands were at her hip bones, his mouth on her stomach. He was majestic in her bed. King of the wolves. Rex tremende majestatis, she said.
Pardon?
Does Raymond mean king?
Protector, he said. Or counselor.
The behind-the-scenes man, she thought. His thumb ran a circle around the little red fish by her hip bone, stretching her skin taut, then letting it go. It's what you do when you're 20, she said. Ink a boyfriend into your skin, because forever is only as far as you can see.
You do these things when you're in love,
Ray said. He laid his cheek on her belly, his warm palm sliding over the fish, almost reverently.
You do these things when someone tries to shoot down that love. It's what you do to survive. Maybe the lover goes away, but what you do for love stays with you forever.
His arms slid up her sides, and he held her.
Maybe you did one terrible thing to him, but everything else you did for him, Daisy, was beautiful.
She breathed in the truth of that, making Ray's head rise. Slowly she exhaled him down, then opened her arms. Come here. He slid up her body, crushing her with his warm, strong weight and his heady scent. Hard shoulders and arms, soft hair on his chest, her head in his hands.
What do you want from me?
He whispered, kissing around her mouth. His voice caressed the words. They were an offering, not a lament. Your time, she said, touching the neat edge of his sideburn. Your attention. He kissed her, slow and gorgeous, his eyes open and staring into hers. Your secrets, she said, her chest thick with desire.
I don't have secrets.
Everyone has one secret. He looked off to the side a moment, then gave a resigned sigh.
My name isn't Raymond, he said. It's George.
Shut up, she said, laughing. He dodged the swat of her hand, grabbed it in his, and pressed it against his smile. You're a lovely man, she said, his eyes closed.
Say that again.
She kissed him. You're a lovely man. His body shifted. She felt him hard on her inner thigh, and then pushing into her. What do you want? She said, wrapping her limbs about him. He rocked back, then moved deeper in her, all up in her legs and hips, his arms holding her tight, soft like the coat of a wolf, wild and commanding inside her. Beautiful.
I want to take care of you, he said. Not because I think you're helpless. Helpless women don't fight your kind of fight and win. It's because of your strength that I want to take care of you.
She rolled and rose up over him, planting her knees on either side of his heaving chest. The ball of his shoulder in her palm, his hands twining up into her hair. She slid along the length of him, delicate and precise, as his hips pushed up hard.
I want to fall in love with you, he said. Don't stop me.
She let him fall, tumbling right alongside. Her heart was free. She was in. She felt beautiful and glorious. A daisy made up of ray flowers.
The head won on a bet. At first, Daisy thought the illustrated notes Ray left on her pillow were darling. Little flowers, faces, and figures punctuated his loving and funny words. She tucked the slips of paper into the mirror frame at her dressing table, collaged them on the refrigerator door, and used them as bookmarks. Little by little, she noticed when his hands had nothing to do, they reached for a pen, and he never went anywhere without scraps of paper tucked in his inside pocket. Why not carry a notebook? She asked once.
If I have a notebook with me, I don't feel like drawing, he said. It seems to be only when it's inconvenient to draw that it strikes me.
Ray liked to make swift decisions and not be second-guessed by others or himself. He did the crossword with a pen. He drew only in ink. I like having one chance at some things, he said. As if, Daisy thought, he had missed a crucial chance once and was forever drilling and rehearsing not to miss again. Without the safety net of eraser, he drew creatures with large eyes and no mouths. Their bodies were roly-poly and too small for their large heads. But as the weeks with Daisy passed, and Ray spent short hours observing her in performance, and longer hours running his hands over her in bed, his little beings began to change shape on paper. Their figures grew elongated and slender. They began to leap over flowers instead of sitting upon them.
Hold still,
Ray would often say, catching Daisy in the middle of stretching up to retrieve something off a shelf or bending to pick something off the floor. She was a dancer. When she did such mundane things, one leg or arm unconsciously went up in an accompanying pose. She didn't even think about it.
Don't move,
Ray said, around the cap of his pen held in his teeth. His dark eyebrows furrowed as he pinned the lines of her body to the paper.
They're silly, he said, shrugging.
He capped the pen and slid the paper across to her. I love them, she said. As a serious joke, she bought a pack of washable magic markers and slid it under the pillow on his side of the bed. They had been together a little over a month, and he had a definitive side. Ray laughed and bopped her lightly on the head with them, but she could tell he was pleased. And after loving her, he made a mural on her back. Little Fay with wings of gold, coral, azure, and violet, fluttering up her spine and nestling beneath her shoulder blades, sprinkling petals on her shoulders. They smeared rainbows from her skin to his when they made love again, color melting into the sheets. Enchantresses bubbled away down the shower drain the next morning.
I love you,
Ray said, washing her back. Under the spray of water, he began to sing softly.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do.
True, she said.
What?
It's give me your answer, true.
No, it's not. It's do.
Excuse me, it's my song. It's true.
Excuse me, I'm more than a decade older than you, and I know what the lyrics are.
My father sang me the damn song. It's true.
He sang it wrong. You are absolutely wrong.
She reached and turned off the taps. I'm right. Ray snapped a towel off the rack and threw it at her, then took one for himself.
Would you care to make a small wager on this, darling?
You will lose, darling.
I'm giving you the chance to capitulate with dignity.
Never. Wrapped in towels, leaving damp footprints on the floor, they marched to Daisy's desk. If I'm right, you're buying me shoes, she said.
You're wrong, and I'm getting a blowjob.
Why do men always wager that? She typed Daisy Bell lyrics into the search box and hit the enter key. Shoes last longer.
The sweetest head is given voluntarily. The next sweetest is the head won on a bet. What about the head you have to beg for? Not as sweet, but definitely not sour. Well,
fuck,
Daisy muttered, staring at the screen.
You're right.
Oh, I love you're right. Say it again.
You're right. I'm wrong.
It's due.
With a flourish, Ray whipped the towel from his waist and tossed it away, narrowly missing Sovereign, who mewed indignantly.
I've been singing it wrong for 30 years, she said.
It's never too late to fix these things.
I have to rearrange my entire childhood.
Ray cleared his throat.
I do have a flight to catch.
Still staring at the screen, Daisy reached and closed him up in her fingers.
I can't believe it, she said.
I'll never tell.
She sighed with a shrug, then got up and went back to the bedroom, leading Ray behind her, not by the hand.
You're a lady of your word, he said happily.
Give me your answer true. The Jacques Cartier Bridge spanned Montreal Harbor and averaged 10 suicides a year. On a rainy spring evening, Noelle Bonlieu became one of 1992's statistics.
Her heart was broken,
Ray said, as he and Daisy lay in bed at his apartment in Montreal.
Arielle wasn't our only child. Sandrine came a year later, but we lost her to cancer, and Noelle was never the same.
Daisy squeezed her eyes shut, involuntarily turning her head from the image of a woman poised on the rail of a bridge, poised on the edge of a life no longer worth living. When asked, Ray went out to the living room and came back with some photos. He showed Daisy the girls as babies, then as toddlers, a pair of gorgeous redheads like flame under sunshine. Daisy smiled and exclaimed as her fingers turned the years over. In the last shot, the sisters were perhaps 5 and 6, sitting with Ray at a table crowded with paper, brushes, and paints. In the background, slightly blurred, Noelle loaded the dishwasher. A beautiful portrait of a loving family. Except,
God,
Daisy whispered, reaching with a fingertip to touch the image. Arielle's hair fell long and lush down her back, but Sandrine was bald. Veins showing through the porcelain skin stretched over her skull. From her free hand, snaked tubes to the IV pole behind her chair.
Oh, Ray.
Ray turned the photo toward him. His smile wobbled, but it was filled with a fierce affection.
She was tough, he said. So brave, right until the end.
How old?
Nearly 7.
I'm so sorry.
He showed her the collection of little people he drew for his daughters over the years, now bound into a half dozen miniature books. Did your wife find these? Daisy asked, examining the cloth and leather covers with an almost reverent awe, admiring the meticulous craftsmanship. The page's deckel edges were luxuriantly thick against her fingertips.
No, my father-in-law, he said. I asked him to, after Noelle. I wanted them bound for Arielle. I feel the pictures belong to her, but she's never come to claim them or bring them to live with her. I thought maybe when she had the baby.
Daisy set the books carefully on the nightstand and turned to put arms around him.
I'm sorry.
His fingers pushed into her hair, carefully tugged their way down and out. His body felt so serene and peaceful under her hands, and she didn't understand how. Something about his peace was upsetting her. She pushed the sheets aside, got up on one elbow as her eyes followed the path of her palm over his chest and shoulders. Her touch trailed down and up his arms in a confused search.
What?
He said.
Roll over.
He gave her a puzzled look and turned onto his stomach. The skin was softest on his back, freckled over his shoulder blades and solid further down like tea with a splash of milk. Her eyes and hands kept sweeping him, searching, moving down the strong muscles of his legs to his feet. He shivered as she touched the hollows of heels and the secret place behind his knees.
What are you looking for?
He said. She surfed up his body and stretched out on his back, curving her arms around his arms. Beneath the pillow, she wove their fingers together.
You had to explain to your child she was going to die, she whispered against his head. You buried your daughter. Then you had to go claim Noelle.
You got the call and you had to go. Did you go to the bridge?
The morgue, he said, his fingers curling around hers.
And you had to tell Ariel what happened. Twice you had to tell her.
Yes.
She swallowed. Did you feel to blame? For Noelle? Wonder if you could have done something differently?
Of course. I tore my soul to shreds wondering what I could have done to stop her. And I bore the brunt of Ariel's grief as well. She was young and needed justification, something or someone to blame for the loss of her sister and her mother. I know our relationship suffered because I was her whipping boy when she needed a father. For years, it seemed everywhere I looked, including the mirror, I only saw incriminating eyes.
And yet, she slid off him again and set her palm in the center of his back. You don't have a mark on you. Tears blurred her vision as she gazed upon the whole, unmarred and intact surface of his skin. Not one cut, not one scar, not even a tattoo. You felt no need to make the blame visible on your body. He rolled to his side.
No, I didn't.
His fingertips gently touched her wet face as her hand moved along his arm. This is hard to explain, she said. But it's like your skin is the bravest thing I've ever seen. He looked up at her, bewilderment in his expression, but understanding as well.
Thank you, he said.
She woke up alone in bed the next morning, which was typical. Ray didn't sleep in, up at dawn no matter what day of the week. He never disturbed her rest, although he insisted she get up by 10 for practical purposes. You must get up, he would say, opening the drapes, or you won't nap properly later. She gathered the sheet around herself and went down the hall, trailing 500 thread count Egyptian cotton like a bride. The apartment smelled of fresh coffee. Ray had a fire going and Chopin on the stereo. He sat at his drafting table wearing the textured navy blue shirt she loved, the sun through the window making a halo around his head, his quiet, rugged handsomeness making Daisy's heart press against the wall of her chest. Are you the one? He looked up, took off his glasses and smiled at her.
Can this be mine?
He said, opening his arms. She went to him, wriggled between his knees, between the high stool and the drafting table, which he preferred to a desk. She snuggled back against him as his arms circled her and went on drawing. I'm so happy, she said. He put his forehead down on her shoulder, kissed her neck. His hand, she noticed, was covering up his work. What are you up to?
Just a bit of an idea.
What?
It's stupid.
Show me. He shuffled drawings around and brought to the top a sheet where he'd written the lyrics of Daisy Bell. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer true. True? She asked.
True, he said, kissing the side of her face. From now on, it will always be true.
I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage. But you'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two. Surrounding the words was a bower of daisies, and beneath it, a couple on a tandem bicycle. Ray's distinctive creatures made human. The same button eyes and mouthless faces, but they were definitely people, not fairies. A mid-century feel was in the illustration, a bygone time rendered soft with watercolor and detailed with India ink. Did you make this for me? She said. He turned over another page.
Here's where it gets stupid.
A skyscape now, going from pastel day in the bottom left to indigo twilight in the top right. A hot air balloon piloted by a man in cap and goggles, his passenger a blonde lady, a long white scarf waving floating behind her like a banner. Out the back of the basket dropped tiny purple flowers, drifting down and about the page, circling another verse. Violet, violet, give me your answer true. I'll be a pilot and fly away with you. On top of the clouds we'll tarry, among the stars we'll marry,
and songs we'll sing upon the wings of an air balloon built for two. Every page, a woman's floral name, a made-up verse and an illustration.
Ray, she said again, completely drawn in.
She couldn't think of a word to do the illustrations justice. Charming, precious, breathtakingly simple and innocent.
I want to live in them, she said.
The sweet lullaby tune filled her head. Her finger touched a scene of a couple on a back porch, cozied on a glider swing. Beneath the railings was drawn the sword-like foliage of irises.
Iris, Iris, give me your answer true. I'll blow one kiss across the lawn to you.
You'll catch it on your finger, and through the day 'twill linger, till fireflies dance and hold us entranced on a back porch built for two.
If I were a little girl, I would want a book like this on my shelf, she said.
I'm a big girl, and I want it.
It's yours.
His warm hands ran up and down her back, gently pushing the sheet open and away, turning her to face him.
And so am I, he said.
Ray was well connected, and friends and colleagues were more than happy to help him get it published. Within a month, he'd finished the verses and drawings, pitched the book and sold it, and partnered with a children's charity to donate all the proceeds. He arrived in St. John one weekend and brought Daisy one of the first printed copies. He drew her into his lap and opened the book to the dedication page.
For Daisy. Because you do these things when you're in love.
Partner in a New Way. The St. John Herald, December 15, 2003. Nutcracker brings endings and beginnings for New Brunswick Ballet Theatre. Saturday evening's performance of the second act of Nutcracker was a charming and heartfelt farewell for Marguerite Bianco and William Kager, who are retiring as principal dancers with the company and taking up reins as co-artistic directors in January. Since 1999, this partnership has been bringing a magical joy to NBBT's repertory, but the roots of Kager and Bianco's affinity stretch back another decade to when they met at Lancaster University in 1989.
Our teacher put us together in partnering class, Kager says. I don't know if it was a random choice or she had an idea we'd dance well together, but within 10 minutes, we had a connection.
It was magic, Bianco says. I don't typically believe in magic, but right away, dancing with Will was extraordinary.
We're not alike, Kager says. She's a much more cerebral dancer than me. She's pragmatic and thoughtful, and I do everything on impulse. But somehow, it worked. She made me think a little more.
He made me let go a little more.
And then we were partners.
Partners and friends through Lancaster's 1992 tragedy when a fellow dance student came into the theater with a gun and opened fire, killing five students and a professor before turning the gun on himself. Kager was shot once in the side and again in the left hand, losing two of his fingers. Bianco was shot through the leg and did not dance for a year. When she did come back to the studio, she and Kager had to learn to partner in a new way, working around their injuries.
We were even closer then, Bianco says. The trust and the love were so much stronger between us. I've never had with any other partner what I have with Will. And I feel so fortunate I was able to be in a company with him for 4 years, and now taking over as artistic directors.
There's no one else I'd want to do this with.
No one who'd want to do it with me, Kager says. She's the only one crazy enough.
Both Kager and Bianco are accomplished choreographers. Bianco's memorial ballet, Rakewind, won Capizio's coveted ACE Award and has been staged for the Anaheim Ballet, Charlotte Ballet Theater, and Miami Civic Ballet. Kager's Powakotsi, set to music by Philip Glass, was featured at the Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival this summer. Both ballets are planned for NBBT's coming season, as well as other works in progress. Their final performance as Sugar Plum and Cavalier in Nutcracker brought the Imperial Theater to its feet Saturday night. Kager and Bianco danced not as storybook characters, but as dear human friends. And as they took their rightfully deserved multiple curtain calls, one can only see this finale as an overture.
between certainties and doubts. June 17, 2004. Dear Rita, it's been an exhausting, exciting time. I feel like I've reached a creative apex in my career, and I feel so happy, so complete. And, I can hear you say, Ray and I hit our first major pothole a few months ago when Daisy was released. His daughter Arielle called on the phone screaming at me, screaming at him. How dare he take the pictures he drew for her and her sister, publish them, and dedicate them to another woman? I'd never been on the receiving end of such an ugly scene. And I have to say, even though they weren't exactly the pictures he drew for them, I could understand how she felt. In her mind, it was her mother's unfinished project, now finished and given to someone else. I was shocked Ray hadn't told her about the book. It seemed so thoughtless and out of character for him. The situation has cooled down, but so has the air between Arielle and me, which was never warm and fuzzy to begin with. Meanwhile, Ray and I have been talking about getting married. Oh God, I don't know. I love Ray, but his family dynamic is so strange. His parents are stiff and formal, and one of his brothers is a real misogynistic prick. Do I want to marry into this? Furthermore, do I want to bring a child into this? Which raises another issue. Ray had a vasectomy years ago. It didn't matter when we started dating. Now that our eyes are turning further down the road, I'm feeling like it's going to start mattering. I am not getting the feeling he wants to have a family with me. I think he wants just us. God, the crossroads suck. In a way, Ray has been the perfect boyfriend for me. He's elbow deep in his own ventures, and he isn't possessive of me or my time. So our affair continues along with neither of us making demands or making plans. It stays in the present. Ray goes from Montreal to Quebec City to St. John to Halifax, and he's toying with the idea of opening a gallery in Toronto. And me, I'm racking up the frequent flyer miles as well. Will and I go here and there to give master classes or workshops, stage ballets on other companies. Ray and I simply arrange our time so it works. We're here, we're there, and in between, we're together as much as possible. His is certainly a style of life I could get used to. He doesn't throw his money around, but he cherishes me. Gifts, weekends to Paris, concerts and shows and museum openings, black tie events. Anytime I'm homesick, he puts me on a plane or gives my parents the keys to his apartment. And I love him, yet on the Sunday nights when my apartment door closes behind him or when I'm buckled into my seat on the plane, it's the tiniest frisson of luxuriant relief. Not that I want to escape him, but I look forward to my solitude again, home in my little apartment with only Sovereign's company. I miss Ray when we're apart, but not enough to die over it. Certainly not enough to change my life for it, and it kind of bothers me. Anyway, between life's accomplishments and struggles, between certainties and doubts, I'm hanging in the middle, doing all right. I hope you are too. Daisy. Sovereign. Ray's hand was almost rough as it turned Daisy's face to him.
I want to marry you.
Tears sprung to her eyes, but not from joy.
Will you marry me, Daisy?
To shake her head would be cruel as saying no. But she had no words. She bowed her forehead into his palm and did nothing.
Give me your answer true,
he said. A smile tried to break through her mouth and failed. She slid her arms around his waist, taking handfuls of his shirt as she lifted her head. I will want to have children, Ray. This won't change. I need to know if it's part of your vision. Do you want a family with me? Or do you want to be just a couple?
His hands gripped her shoulders. I want to be your husband.
And that's all? Don't tell me what you think I want to hear. Give me your answer.
I don't want to lose you. I love you more than I ever.
The bravery of speaking the truth made his voice crack open, knowing the truth could cost him.
I want you and me, he said. I want you to myself. I have no doubt you'd be a wonderful mother, but being a father at 20 and being a father at 50 are two completely different things.
Honey, this isn't about your age, she said.
Of course it's not, he said, breaking away. You want the ugly, selfish truth? That I'm afraid to have a child with you? Afraid, at best, I won't be the sole recipient of your attention, and at worst, to see the light sucked out of your eyes if, God forbid, something should happen? Will hearing it make you feel better?
Deflated, one of his hands dropped onto the back of a chair. The other dragged across his face.
I'm sorry,
he said. Her heart tore down the center as she went into his arms. She understood how he kept love at a distance all those years, understood the extent of the risk he took loving her after he lost Noelle. But the risk of having another child, the risk of losing that child and watching another wife go mad with grief, Ray's soul would never make such a gamble again. He'd drawn this decision long ago in ink.
But,
and I can't erase my dream.